In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Our recent coolest song of the world is a version of the Kinks song, Do You Remember Walter, that the Anderson Council did for the compilation album Gem Records Celebrates Ray Davies. The recording was co-produced by the band's Peter Horvath and Kurt Ryle. The latter is also the drummer and lead singer in the Gripweeds. They also contribute to the album, and Kurt also helped organize the entire project. He's my guest today, and he'll tell us all about it. But first, we'll hear a portion of Do You Remember Walter, followed by my interview with Kurt on our coolest conversations in Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's the Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and it's time for our coolest conversations. My guest is Kurt Ryle from the Gripweeds, a multi-instrumentalist, best known as the drummer and singer in the band. He, along with his bandmates, wife Kristen and brother Rick, run House of Vibe Studios in Highland Park, New Jersey. And Kurt, with the Anderson Council's Peter Horvath, produced this week's coolest song in the world, the Anderson Council's version of the Kinks song, Do You Remember Walter, which you can find on Gem Records Celebrates Ray Davies. How are you, Kurt?
I'm great. How are you doing, Manfred?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there. Right. You know, the last we spoke, that was in 2021, and the Gripweeds had contributed to this Gem Records release. Gem Records celebrates Brian Wilson. So there's been Brian Wilson and John Lennon and Pete Townsend and now Ray Davies, right? Have I got all the ones that are out there?
Yeah, you got them. You got them. So far. Well,
when did this project start shaping up?
I think it was last year. 2022, there was some back and forth about who between Marty Scott, the owner of Gem Records, and I. Actually, we were discussing which artist to celebrate.
Yeah,
and I was lobbying hard for Ray Davies. I just thought perfect, you know, right at the bullseye of the label. Of the bands on the label, there's such a huge catalog that Ray Davies has written of wonderful songs, and I just thought that's the way to go. And Marty had other ideas, and eventually, though, he came over to my thinking.
He saw things correctly in the end.
Yeah, he saw things correctly. That's right.
Well, give me an idea of what were some of the. What would be some of the other, let's call them songsmiths, that he might have his sights on in the future, that Gem Records might do in the future?
I probably shouldn't say, because I think Marty would want to keep that close to the vest.
Okay.
Just so that the next time, there is another next time coming, and I do know who the artist is, but I really shouldn't say, because we're talking about Ray Davies.
Right. Well, that's fine. So I look in here, though, Brian Wilson, we got three English dudes and Brian Wilson. So are there noteworthy American songwriters that will be highlighted in the future?
I really hope so. You know, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how tight the qualifications are to be celebrated by Jem. I mean, I would say, why not Carole King? Why not a woman, you know, who's a great songwriter as well? I mean, if songwriting is the criteria, then, you know, there's all sorts of people that you could celebrate. So now I'm not saying anything that Marty's going to do what I say on that, but, you know, you never know. I think it's kind of open because Marty focused this on the songwriter and not the singer necessarily.
Yeah. Right.
Although each of the celebrated artists here are dual, you know, singer songwriters,
right,
and in bands, you know, so I don't know. It really depends on how narrow the definition is for who gets celebrated.
Well, talking about Jem Records celebrates Ray Davies, 13 tracks on the album, of course, all done by Jem Records recording artists. Was there any criteria as to what songs the bands could record outside of it just being a Ray Davies composition?
Well, not so much. Marty's always been pretty open to what bands have wanted to do and the songs that they felt compelled to record. And the Gripweeds, I'll speak for the Gripweeds. Our criteria for picking these songs to celebrate artists is whether we can find something in the song to justify another version of it. And also, you know, if we can inhabit that song with the Gripweeds vibe, for instance, that's kind of our criteria. So if there's a song that's too big or too, tied to the recording, I'd probably not want to do it. Now, I can't speak for how the other bands work, but Marty's pretty, he's pretty open with what the bands want to do. He does try to, you know, coordinate so no one's doing the same song.
Obviously. Oh, right.
And maybe there's a good sort of representation of songs. I mean, but it is a bit of a crapshoot for what the bands want to do.
Right.
The Gripweeds chose two songs from the 60s just because that's where the musical heart of the band kind of is, and also because we felt those songs had something that the songs are so strong as songs that you could, you know, Ray Davies' songs are so great, you can do different interpretation and the songs still hold up because they're so great to begin with, and it was just a matter of finding something in there that we could bring to it.
Well, one thing I guess maybe I'll touch on this in a bit as well, but were there any versions of tunes that Marty or you guys felt like, well, you know, we're not going to use that? I mean, were there any versions of tunes that were rejected?
Well, it's funny because The Sins, here's an example of a little bit of a breakdown in the coordination.
Yeah.
I told Marty, we're going to do Where Have All the Good Times Gone? And I said, make sure, you know, write that down. See my friends, Where Have All the Good Times Gone? We're going with those. And well, for whatever reason, he forgot. And he gave that song, Where Have All the Good Times Gone, to The Sins. He said, why don't you record Where Have All the Good Times Gone? So they actually started working on it. I said, no, Marty. We've already I told you, and we're working on it already, and so we had first dibs. So that was an example of a song that had to you know, sort of be put aside. There may have been one or two others I probably shouldn't even say, because who knows, maybe the other bands might want to reuse them. So I don't know.
Well, let's point out that the Sins do have a contribution to the album as a version of I Need You.
Yes, they do. I think what you're talking about, though, is there a quality control element here? Is that what you're
talking about? Well, right. Something where somebody did a song and you guys are like, well, you know, somehow
it's not a very good representation of this tune.
Yeah, that has happened before. I really shouldn't talk about who that was, but that would happen. Marty would play me. Because I'm kind of the right-hand man with these albums far as developing them. Marty is the producer of the project, but I do get a chance to kind of weigh in on my thoughts, and especially in sequencing. So I would say, didn't quite hit the mark on that. Maybe we don't want to use that, or, you know, maybe it needs to be edited. I mean, that could happen too. That has happened.
Yeah. So no one thought to do a Rainy Day in June. You familiar with that? Face to Face? I always thought that that would be a cool song to cover and back it with David Bowie's Laughing Gnome, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I could see a recording of that, that could definitely work. And as I said before, Ray Davies songs, they're so rich and so... they stand up to whatever you can throw at them, almost, you know. But I felt that a lot of the later songs, they're so definitive that I didn't want to touch them, like Sleepwalker or something. Pick one of the later songs. I'd be like, you know, I just don't want to go there. The earlier songs seem simpler and more raw. And more.
Well, let me focus on that for a second, because conspicuous by its absence, there's no version of You Really Got Me, because nobody wanted to compete with Van Halen. But even that earlier,
so
Nick Puente does Till the End of the Day, but there's no like All the Day and All the Night. So that's kind of bar chord thing. Lee isn't going on. The emphasis seems to be more in like later 60s, the 70s, and 80s even. I wonder, maybe I'm wrong, because we did mention The Sins doing I Need You, but it did seem to be weighted more towards the later 60s and not as much of the earlier 60s material.
Well, I guess that just kind of happened. I don't think that was by design. I think that was by the bands being gravitating towards whatever song they wanted to do.
Right.
But I can speak for myself and the Gripweeds in that I don't think I'd go near All Day and All the Night to try to better that record. Good luck, you know, or a recording that's so, you know, seared into the, imagination or everybody's collective consciousness, you know. Nah, it's like doing Hey Jude. I think I'll skip that, you know.
Well, you know what? One thing about Where Have All the Good Times Gone that I really think you guys did a cool thing with when you guys are covering. We're going to get to that in a moment. But first, I want to talk some specifically about the Anderson Council and the tracks that they did. They did a version of This Is Where I Belong and our coolest song in the world this week, Do You Remember Walter? Now, were these tunes both recorded at y'all's studio at House of Vibes?
Yes. Yeah, I recorded those tracks.
And do you recall, did Peter from the band, did he ever give you any inclination or any idea why they chose either of those songs?
Well, I know just because I've been working with Peter and the Anderson Council in every configuration they've ever had. I just know how they operate, how he operates.
Yeah.
In that, you know, he kind of like us, he's not going to pick All Day and All the Night. He'll pick something that's under the radar. And he'll probably go even farther under the radar than we did. I think he did, because, I mean, at least we picked songs that were singles. He didn't pick songs that were even singles. And I think This Is Where I Belong may not even have been released at the time. Am I wrong about that? Or did that come out in England and not America or something? Or,
you know, it's funny about that. I mean, I know that Do You Remember Walter was actually a B-side.
Oh, it was. Okay.
And then it's also on the Village Green Preservation Society. But song I don't remember.
I think what I know of that song is it was on the Kink Chronicles in the early 70s.
Yeah.
And I don't know about it anywhere else, but that could be in England. It could have been out there. And I'm not that familiar with the English catalog or single releases of the Kinks. But getting back to the recording of the tracks, basically Peter and the band come in with a pretty much a live arrangement of the song and pretty self-contained, two guitars, bass, drums, knock it out, you know, and just get it. We would just work on getting a really good take of, you know, and that is how they play the song live. Exactly. You know, and that's, but then I would kind of go, you know, into producer mode after that and look to see how we could take this live version and turn it into a record with a capital R. As Art Garfunkel once said, he said, there's a record and then there's a record with a capital R. And a record with a capital R is like an experience. It's a little different from just a performance. It's sort of a sculpture, an audio sculpture. You know what I mean?
Now, did Garfunkel give the audio sculpture bit to that quote, or is that yours?
That's me.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
But he talked about something like Bridge Over Troubled Water being a record with a capital R, and that always stuck with me. As a producer in making records, you call it a record, vinyl, or you know, digital download, it's still a record. You know, it's still a release. And just to keep the interest of the listener from switching that dial is the trick, you know. And also outside of that is to make a song all it could be as a listening experience. Like, how do you heighten the Do You Remember Walter vibe, you know? And that's why I'll turn myself inside out pretty much on every song I do of how do I connect the songwriter to this audio, to the band, so that the listener comes away with like, wow, that's really cool, you know. And that's kind of what I look to do. So all my contributions to, let's say, the Anderson Council Do You Remember Walter were how to take that live version and blow it up. So I added some backing vocals, I added some keyboard bits and stuff, and I put in this cool instrument called a marxophone.
A what? Say again.
It's called a marxophone, and it looks like a auto harp. It's a it's an old instrument, and you hit it with it's got these little metal tongs on it that you hit, you push, and that's what makes the sound. If you think of like Death of a Clown, the opening to Death of a Clown, or Alabama Song by the Doors, oh, show me the way, ding, ding, that weird instrument, that's a marxophone. And I just kind of thought on this song, that's the way to go. So I put the marxophone on there, and Peter's like, what's that weird doorbell thing you put on there? Sounds like a broken doorbell. I'm like, well, no.
So he was going from right from the outset, he was good with it, right?
Well, he wasn't. He was kind of like, I didn't know if he was good with it. But I was like, Peter, this is really cool. I just have this feeling. And eventually I did sell him on it, and my backing vocals that I added to it. So that's the areas where, like, I would sort of, and actually I'm reading it right now on the back cover. Peter's liner notes for this record, for these songs, it says, produced/fought over. By Kurt Ryle and Peter. and that's what he's referring to. Because I was like, Peter, this is a really cool thing, the marxophone. And no one else is going to use it, you know? And those vocals I put in.
Yeah. Well, let me
so
ask
that's,
you this.
Those were the areas. Go ahead.
So I was wondering, because yourselves, the group, we've got two songs on there. The Anderson Council has two tunes. Did everybody record two songs, or that just happened to be those particular artists that have two songs on there had two songs recorded?
Well, I'm looking now. Jonathan Pushkar also has two songs.
Right, right.
You're right. The other artists have one. I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've always viewed it as an opportunity to have, from the group point of view, to have a song that's a little tighter, a little more of a single.
Yeah.
and then have a song where you can step out and kind of be, have a little more production. And we've done that on each album. We've kind of had Heroes and Villains is a perfect example on the Brian Wilson album, where we kind of took a song and added bits of Smile to it,
right,
Smile album, and kind of turned it into the 7 minute, five, seven minutes kind of production epic, you know. And then we did it again with The Who. We did a quick one, and we did it with Strawberry Fields, kind of took that song and you know, presented it our own way. So we always looked at this as kind of a way to kind of step out, and then one sort of the on the other side to kind of do something that's a little more straight ahead that maybe the underground garage would want to play.
Well, let's talk about those the couple songs that you guys have on the wall. Specifically, we're going to go out with your version of Where Have All the Good Times Gone. And what I really liked about this, and I was alluding to this earlier, we were talking about the some of their earlier rocking tunes, You Really Got Me, All the Day and All the Night. You've got those bar chords kind of sliding around. And then on your version of Where Have All the Good Times Gone, you get that sense. It's buried in there, you know. And if you listen to the original, that's not emphasized. And I just think that's a really cool way that you interpreted the song. What was your thought process in putting together your version, Gripweed's version of Where Have All the Good Times Gone?
Well, exactly that we were, I sort of viewed, where we viewed that song, you know, through the lens of the Kinks' early singles. And it in a way, their version of it sort of was a little less powerful than, let's say, All Day and All the Night or something, you know, or something like that, till the end of the day. And maybe they just wanted to do something else with the song, but we kind of felt that song, it had those elements of, like, you could lay into it with the guitars, and it just felt right to go there. And that was kind of our mission statement, really. In, you know, instead of remaking the Kinks record, which is kind of redundant, really, because it's already out there, you know, how do you give the song something else? Or, as our good buddy Mark Lindsay would say, how do we make this more of what it is? That's what he would always ask me in the studio. He'd be like, how do we make this more of what it is? And that's kind of what we were looking at with Where Have All the Good Times Gone. How do we, you know, dig into this song, you know, kind of like really as a band, you know, and find that power. And, you know, and the lyric too, you know, Where Have All the Good Times Gone? It's kind of angry, or it's at least cynical, I guess, you know, so it's a little punky, you know, so it seemed appropriate to kind of apply a little bit more of a hard edge to it. And it's something that has always been a part of the Gripweed sound. That song is actually a really good example of what we've always wanted to do, which is kind of marry the power pop to the harmonies, you know, of the choir boy, you know, vocals and stuff, and which to me is the essence of power pop. You know, it's as defined by Pete Townsend, it would be that. And we've always sort of striven to do that, you know, and I think that's why we wanted to do that song. See My Friends was a whole other kettle of fish.
Well, tell me about that. How did this, what's the story on See My Friends?
Well, that one, we felt that there's a definite raga or kind of psychedelic vibe in that song. And I think that that song came out in 1965. And that was pretty much a real early example of the drone Indian influence in rock. You know, I think it predated, I may be wrong, but I think it may have predated the Beatles with Norwegian Wood. I kind of think it did.
I kind of agree with you. I think that's the case too. I remember some quote from Shel Talmy going on about it, about how it was predating things. He was pinning it to somebody else, actually, that he claimed that Davies had heard and was kind of, you know, interpreting further. But you know.
Oh, it's probably one of those English folk musicians or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but no, we saw the kind of the opportunity with that modal drone-y kind of thing to kind of go a little bit more Tomorrow Never Knows with See My Friends, you know, kind of add in a little bit more of a sweeping kind of, you know, just blow the song up a little bit more. And that's what we tried to do. And what I'm very proud of in that song is the middle eight or the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of take the song completely out of itself, and it goes really sort of almost Baroque pop with this like keyboard, and it's completely away from, you know, droning Indian stuff, and it goes into this totally ornate kind of, you know, prissy sort of thing, and then it goes right back into the power. So I was really proud of that moment in the middle of the song to do that, and that's pretty much why I wanted to do this song, because I felt we could give it a little more scope, you know, than they could have in 1965, and I don't think anybody else has ever done with this song. So yeah, it was an opportunity, and that's really how I look at, you know, these Gem Celebrates. What else can we do with it besides a carbon copy? You know, what can we, you know, we're producers and musicians. Let's bring something else and hype it and blow it up somehow, because we can, you know.
Let me ask you this. We will go out with Where Have All the Good Times Gone? But yeah, since we're specifically right now talking about the Grip Weeds, so what's upcoming for you guys?
Oh, we got a lot coming up. We've been working a long time on a few different projects at the same time. There's things that are completed and dusted that haven't come up yet that I can't talk about. And now we've got a new album that we're working on. And it's actually a two-part project. We've got a bunch of songs that we had written years ago that we never did. And we're doing them now. And then we have all new songs that we're working on. So we've got a couple of projects in production right now that I'm really excited about. And it's all new. Well, it's all new to the listener, but original, all original stuff. So I'm just really excited right now. And in fact, just after we get off this interview, I'm probably going right back to work.
Well, Kurt, thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and you know that.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you and catching up on stuff, too, in general.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take a listen now to one of the Gripweed's contributions to Gem Records Celebrates Ray Davies. Here's Where Have All the Good Times Gone in Little Steven's Underground Garage. That was Gripweeds here in Little Steven's Underground Garage with some of their version of the King song, Where Have All the Good Times Gone? And that is part of Gem Records Celebrates Ray Davies. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the Gripweeds' Kurt Ryle for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Mark Ribbler is Little Steven's music director for the Disciples of Soul, and he's due to have a new solo album out in November on Wicked Cool Records. Bassist Jack Daly plays with Mark in the Disciples of Soul, as well as on Mark's solo project. And he's got quite the resume in addition, having worked with the likes of Mick Jagger, Iggy Pop, Bo Diddley, Darlene Love, and others. And Jack will join us next time around to fill us in on Mark's upcoming release. It's bassist Jack Daly on our next Coolest Conversations here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.